Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. The Regional Plan Association, known also as the RPA, had a new idea when it got started back in 1922 to plan for a metropolitan region, in this case, the tri-state area, rather than just focus on one city, even our area's central city that some think is the capital of the world, New York. It has come up with ideas for bridges and tunnels, tangled with the legendary power broker Robert Moses over his love of highways over mass transit in the mid-20th century. And the RPA periodically issues massive plans, regional plans for the area. The first one came out in 1929. The fourth one came out last week. It is focused on the health of the region, physical and economic, and seeks to repair infrastructure and inequality. Big ideas for a big area. But the single item that's gotten the most attention so far is their proposal to shut down the subways every night from 12:30 to 5 a.m. so they can really, really, really fix them this time. But oh no, here's how Mayor de Blasio reacted.
I'm a New Yorker. 24-hour subway service is part of our birthright.
So let's drill down on this idea, but also the others related to the subways, including proposals for new subway lines outside Manhattan, integration between New York and New Jersey, and more. I'm joined by RPA board member Tom Prendergast, a former chairman and CEO for the MTA, some of you may remember, now executive vice president and chief strategy officer of STV Inc., a transportation engineering firm. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
So let's just start with the headline news. Tell everybody why shutting down the subway in the late night, early morning makes sense.
Well, certainly when you talk to people who are native New Yorkers, for the city that never sleeps, the subway never stops. And that's been a staple of their life for a long time. When I first came to New York in 1982, the newest portions of the system were about 50 years old and the oldest were 75. But now the newest portions of the system are closer to 70 and the oldest are over 100. And the system has aged appreciably. We were the only one that had 24/7 service when I came here in the world. London, Paris, the systems we compare ourselves were shut down so they could do critical inspection and maintenance. But for New York, like I said, it's been a staple. But as the infrastructure has aged, it's a trillion-dollar asset, it's necessary to spend more time. So even in my tenure when I was president of New York City Transit, we did Fast Track, which was selected closings of lines for 1 week at a time to do critical maintenance. I think the RPA's recommendation is something to stimulate a discussion and look to see if a more widespread closures. Whether or not you go to the full closure for all 27 lines between midnight and 5 a.m., that's pretty broad reach, but it certainly stimulated a significant dialogue.
Fast Track, people know, shutting down particular stretches of track for limited periods of time, overnights, weekends, like people adjust to now. Why isn't that enough?
Because the size of the system, the number of track miles, the number of infrastructure elements you've got to maintain, and also we have so much work going on at night, the quality of the service has deteriorated. You have 20, 30, 40 work trains out there. So part of this recommendation is aimed at how do you focus some of that work, provide beefed up service. One of the recommendations the RPA has made, and it's a good one, which is if you do closures, make sure you provide enhanced, more frequent bus service up on the streets at night. Now, some will say the bus service is slow, but at night there's far less traffic, far less congestions, and the bus service could provide an acceptable alternative.
Let's go on to some of the other aspects of the plan. And listeners, our lines are open for you to talk to Tom Prendergast, former MTA chair or CEO, now with the Regional Plan Association and the author of that big plan you've been hearing about, or you've probably been hearing about one little piece of a really big plan, and that's to close the subways overnight while repairs go on. So you can call in about that or any other aspect, or give them your ideas. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So you also want to improve things like accessibility.
Yes.
That's a big, big question, a big, big need with so few stations with elevators and air quality in the subway. Talk about accessibility.
Accessibility is a challenge. There's no system in the world that has the number of stations New York has. 473 at last count with the opening of the Second Avenue subway stations. But that provides a tremendous benefit for New York because 70% of the population is with 1/2 mile of the subway station. No other system in the world can make that statement. But the challenge is to how do you provide access in the form of escalators and elevators for people who are mobility limited. And it's not just people in wheelchairs. I'm 65 now. I have difficulty at times walking up and down stairs. So we need to accelerate, and the MTA is trying to accelerate how many stations would be accessible.
And the air?
The air is a difficult issue, but I think we've done an awful lot in terms of trying to limit the number of emissions, certainly in terms of the products we use for braking material in the subway, brake pads, for example, on trains, and provide for more change for ventilation and light down into stations to bring the outdoors into the indoors.
Is there data on whether people are getting sick or long-term disease is being contributed to on platforms or in the subway cars? What's the issue there?
I can't comment on that. You'd have to talk to someone in the medical community, but I do know regular monitoring of station conditions at a variety of locations across the system are done with air monitoring, and I know within allowable limits.
And the plan calls for new subway lines as well as commuter lines. Where would you add subway lines?
Well, there's sections of Brooklyn, for example, that are that were part of the original IND plans back in the 20s and 30s, and to extend subway service to them to also reach that 1/2 mile within a subway station objective. And certainly there's no doubt about it, subway service, you can carry higher capacities of people, longer distances, and less time than you can with a bus.
And commuter lines?
Commuter lines, the approach is to move toward a regional rail system. Right now, there are 3 commuter lines operated by 3 different agencies, 2 from the MTA, Metro North and Long Island Railroad, and 1 from New Jersey Transit. And the amount of trips being taken across the region at large instead of just on the separate systems is increasing continually. And so to look at it on a regional basis, both in terms of planning and delivery of service, is something that deserves merit.
Very expensive to build any kind of new subway or rail line. Very, very expensive. That's why it so rarely gets done anymore.
Absolutely. I mean, when I started in the business back in 1974, the rules of thumb were $10 million for an elevated line, $100 million. Now they're increased by an order of magnitude. So it's $100 million for an elevated line. Order of magnitude could be a little bit greater, and $1 billion for a subway. And so, but it's an investment you make, and the subway's been around 115 years. So you take a look at how you pass off that cost over the years, the benefits the region has seen, the real estate and residential development, commercial development has happened, they're worthwhile investments.
And so to finance all this, congestion pricing, something else, I see you're calling on Governor Cuomo to establish a subway reconstruction public benefit corporation. Is that a financing mechanism?
It's a financing mechanism, but it's also a way to look at how can you manage these projects that are multi-billion dollars. Billion here, billion there. Sooner or later, you're talking about real money. And it's difficult. I have run an agency that delivers daily service, and the challenges of that alone are significant. And to pass off to another entity who can focus solely on construction is, once again, another idea that has significant merit.
Eric in Kensington, you're on WNYC with Tom Prendergast, former MTA chair, now the writer of the Regional Plan Association plan to renew the subways. Hi.
Hi. Hello, former boss. Hi, I'm a train operator with MTA, as said before. A couple things. One, I think this is about cutting jobs. There's a lot of employees that work through the midnight hours. Two, there's a lot of people who use the train in the midnight hours. Three, London just extended their system. They used to shut down at night, and they have a limited system, and people, the cars are crowded at 2 in the morning. And they did it specifically to stimulate economic activity, which it does. I forgot what number I'm up to, but next, it takes several hours to shut down the subway. When we'd shut down for the blizzards and other things that were happening for Sandy, it took several hours to do that.
So, Eric, you want to throw out, as a train operator, a better idea for fixing the subways in a fairly timely manner, in a way they need to be fixed for real?
Just keep going on as it is, but they have the programs where they'll do a whole section for a while.
Fast track, yes.
Yeah, fast track. That's, that's it.
Thank you very much. All right, Eric, thanks for your call. Well, he was calling as a train operator, an MTA employee. Are there labor implications for the plan? Labor is a big expense in the subways.
Yeah, but the plan that the New York City Transit and Chairman Loda and Ronnie Hickam have put together actually adds resources. It's a subway action improvement plan, and it's the addition of employees and staff to be able to do immediate repair and improvement actions. So it is. It does affect labor. And to Eric's comment, there's no doubt about it. There are employees who work outside of the system that depend on it. And that's why early on in my comments is to actually close all 27 lines between midnight and 5 is probably the reach too far. But an expansion of fast track, because as the infrastructure ages and failures increase in number, the quality of service degrades. We still have to provide for the 95% of the people who ride outside of those hours.
Peter in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, long-time caller, first-time listener. I just want to say I truly support entirely the idea of, you know, going just for the daytime shift for this for the subways. I think people want the subway to be everything, and I mostly am excited about the reinvestment that this could provide for the buses. And so my question is, what, you know, how can we remove the stigma of the buses? How, what is it that lead people to not like the idea of getting the same public transportation trip but on an above-ground bus instead of below-ground?
I think there's a number of things, one of which is the experience itself on board the vehicle, in which some of the low-floor vehicles and alternative energy vehicles, hybrid buses, electric battery buses, it's a better experience. The primary issue that needs to be dealt with, though, is street congestion. And certainly in the hours between midnight and 5 a.m., you don't have anywhere near the amount of traffic out there. You have refuse trucks, you have delivery trucks, but you don't have all the other passenger automobiles. And if we could beef up that service and provide a very robust service as an alternative when these closures occurred, I think the public may find those that ride at those hours a better level of service.
You also call for changes at the Port Authority and the MTA to make them less politicized. But politicians would have to make these changes. Some of the politicization of the Port Authority was revealed through the Bridgegate scandal, and then the veil got lifted on how how some of that sausage is made and in an ugly way. We see the battle now between the mayor and the governor on the New York side. On the MTA and how that's all kind of politicized, maybe against the interest of the system as a whole and the riders. How can you depoliticize?
Well, if you take a look at the history of just public transport in New York, when you had the unification of the one public and two private operators, the Board of Transportation, the evolution to New York City Transit, and then the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, those are governance changes to be able to have a mechanism to deliver the service better. Legislative actions at a state level. The Port Authority was a federal action to create a bi-state agency, but to respond to the needs at the time. And so this recommendation is aimed at how can we deal with the current problems that exist at these agencies in terms of freeing up some of the bureaucracy and having them deliver the service and their projects in a faster, more efficient way.
Aaron in Long Island City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Brian. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Thanks so much. Really like the show. I'm wondering what the guests would make of a reform to the pricing structure that currently that the subway currently uses, so that unlimited riding might cost much more as a kind of premium amenity, whereas riding just for commuting to and from work every day might be what the current monthly rate costs, or maybe even a little bit less. But it strikes me that there might be that riding on the weekends, late at night, might be at off-peak times, might be something that people would pay more for and could be another revenue driver for the system.
It's sure something that could be discussed, but as much as the 24/7 mantra of service has been a staple in New York, a flat fare across the system, irrespective of time of day or distance, ride, bus, or rail, has been a staple within the system. And that's a very significant change. The idea was to provide attractive ride, a priced ride, where we would entice people to use the system and take them out of their cars. And it's still been part of the process. And also to reward those customers who are daily users with steep discounts on commuter rail and the discount for the monthly pass on the subway.
Am I right that you're also proposing an integration of NJ Transit and the MTA, which is on the New York side?
Yes, that was the idea of the regional railroads. I don't know if it extended to the bus system, but when you take a look at regional rail across the region, number of trips from Long Island into New Jersey or from New Jersey up to the Hudson Valley, if you had an entity that looked at it from a regional perspective. Right now, the MTA does on the east side of the Hudson River, but its perspective or purview doesn't go to the west side. And so and then one of the things about the regional plan, it's looking out 30 years, 40 years, and the demographic changes that are going to occur, what governance structure is going to support those needs looking forward into the future.
And why would it make a difference? A fair number of these things have to do with governance and shifting around the levers of power in the bureaucracy. Why would this one make a difference? New Jersey Transit has its own problems with its own size. The MTA has its own problems with its own size. Why would putting them under one big roof improve the rider experience?
I'll talk specifically about how you plan to deliver service. So if you have three separate agencies that only look within the scope of responsibilities they have, they don't look beyond it, it's very rare that you would have a scheduled train service that would emanate in Long Island and terminate deep into New Jersey or vice versa. But if you had somebody looking at it in a regional perspective, you know, because there are trips that people want to take where they don't want to transfer at Penn Station to go to New Jersey. So you could have trains through run at Penn Station, go further into New Jersey, not necessarily the terminals of the existing lines, but, you know, on the Northeast Corridor to Metro Park, things of that nature where those trips are occurring. And that would be an advantage from a standpoint of service delivery.
Vanessa in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi. Thanks for the in-depth topic. I would suggest having express buses going across the bridges, which I can't understand why we don't have that already, but it would be great to be able to get, you know, from Canal Street to Grand Army Plaza or from City Hall to, you know, downtown Brooklyn and into, deeper into Brooklyn and so on, and, you know, permanently. And my other suggestion is to run the B on evenings and weekends, because that's exactly where people in Brooklyn want to go, to the Village and Soho and so on. And we can't get there except by some other circuitous means because of that closing in service.
With respect to your first suggestion, one of the issues the board deals with is what's the most effective way to deliver service to demand, the customer demand. And the proposal to extend buses over the bridges would put it in direct competition with the subway service. The most costly service to provide is the express bus service in terms of fare box recovery ratio. In other words, for every dollar collected, how much it costs, how much comes out of the fare box to provide the service. And the lowest fare box recovery ratio is for the express buses. So we would actually be competing against ourselves in the more efficient, higher capacity subway. I won't tell you it couldn't be done on specialized routes, but it would be difficult to do it across the board.
As the former head of the MTA, I'm curious where you think things went wrong with subway maintenance and repair, because it did seem like things were clopping along pretty well. People had really come to, you know, take for granted pretty solid subway service since late 80s, early 90s. Was it too much emphasis on station appearance over signals, as some people have said, or other behind-the-scenes infrastructure, or just not enough money in really maintaining, you know, little nips and tucks over here that accumulated over time? Where would you start?
Well, I've done a lot of soul searching personally, because I came back on December 1st, 2009. So it was right on the heels of the Great Recession. So we had issues with respect to drastically dropping revenue that we had to deal with. Largest scale of bus cuts and service cuts that we had in the history of the MTA in its entirety. Then we were followed by Hurricane Sandy. Worst environmental storm that we had ever seen, and the damage that was done to the system. And then we had some very difficult labor negotiations to be able to go through and also negotiate for a capital program. So there were a series of different issues with respect to challenges the organization had to find and comments that people had in terms of living within the cost of living increases when you have fare increases. So in the combination of all involved, and I'm a firm believer in hindsight being 2010, not 2020. You look back and you go, geez, you could have done something a little bit better. And I also come back to the fact that the size of the asset, it's $1 trillion. $1 trillion. And to give that frame of reference, I think it takes 11 days to go 1 million seconds. It takes 23 years to go 23 years to go 1 billion seconds, and I think 23,000 years to go 1 trillion seconds. So the order—
Is that the speed of light or the speed of the C train?
It's certainly not the speed of the C train. So the size of the capital program you need to restore the asset just for state of good repair is a large number, and then expansions and enhancements to services and other number. So it's a combination of all of the above and the aging of the asset. And certainly from a lessons learned standpoint, we don't need to repeat it. And so that's why Joe Loda and the governor and other people have put together a subway improvement action plan to be able to capture back the higher reliability, more dependable service that New Yorkers came to be accustomed to with the rebuilding of the subway in the 80s and the 90s.
But let's come back to money on that point, because I think, if I understand it correctly, the action plan is about $1 billion.
I think it's $836 million.
Yeah.
I think, something like that.
And that's what the mayor and the governor have been, you know, negotiating over who contributes what. But I was speaking to former MTA chair Dick Ravitch recently, and he says, and I think other people say, that's actually a drop in the bucket compared to the really big infrastructure modernization that's needed, that I think is what your RPA report is calling for. So is it $1 billion now or $800 million now just to do this, you know, rapid action plan to make things kind of okay, but then we need to find really big pots of money, and can you put a price tag on it to do the kind of real future-oriented renovation for the 21st century that you're looking at?
Yes, and you need both. You need money from an operating standpoint so you can run the system on a daily basis and a year-in, year-out basis, and that's the improvement plan goes to that. MTA's annual budget, order of magnitude, $14 billion operating budget. The capital budget for the current 5 years is $32 billion. But if you take a look at that trillion-dollar asset and the average useful life of the different elements of the system, that number, order of magnitude, should probably be in closer to the $40 billion range. Every system in the
$40 billion over 5 years. I just want to linger on that. We're talking about less than yeah. $1 billion for this immediate plan.
Right.
You're talking about
$40 billion every
over
5 years.
Just five years.
Yes.
And where's the money for that going to come from?
The money's got to come from new sources. I mean, there were sources established by Dick Ravitch back in the 1980s when the first capital program was developed at $8 billion. It's all relative. But there are other systems in the country have these same challenges, smaller dollar amounts, but on a relative basis, the same. And new funding mechanisms need to be found because the Interstate Highway Trust Fund for gasoline taxes and things, which funded a lot of the infrastructure improvements in the country, is something – was a golden goose, everybody thought, but it's something that really has reached the end of its time. We need to find new funding sources. And that's a challenge across the entire country.
Yeah. And do you get specific about that?
Well, congestion pricing is one, you know pricing on a user basis. I mean, there's some entities that look at the idea of car registrations and how many miles are driven. Carbon taxes, in other words, people who create a bigger carbon footprint paying for supporting revenue streams that fund lower carbon footprints like mass transit, things of that nature. Those are all examples of different mechanisms that different entities across the country are looking at.
Have you had a chance, before you go, to gauge the impact the Republican tax bill might have on the region and its ability to finance repairs like this? Is it relevant?
No, but that bill has to move forward. I mean, early on there was a discussion about an infrastructure bill. When you talk to people who have made a career out of working in the legislative side in Washington, one of the things everyone will tell you just go down there and talk to them, is irrespective of which party was in power, whether it was blue, whether it was red, the one common element every year that they seemed to have cohesion around was an infrastructure bill. Money to be spent for infrastructure for the United States of America, public transit, highways, physical infrastructure to support urban living and rural living. And we've yet to have that dialogue. And it's critical that that dialogue occurs because infrastructure spend at a federal level is needed.
How's the reaction been so far from the people in power? You used to be head of the MTA. Now you're with the RPA think tank. You're also with your own engineering firm, but you did this report for the RPA think tank. They don't have power per se. So the only thing that's really been in the news is that little clip that we played earlier of Mayor de Blasio pushing back and saying overnight subway service is a birthright. But as we've been discussing, there are such bigger things in here, including the massive amount of money needed to really modernize the system. Has Governor Cuomo said anything? Has incoming Governor Murphy said anything? The people who really matter and can get something done here?
I think the comments are still coming in. I've been part of this region since the 1980s, early 80s, and I've seen a number of the regional plans. They stimulate a dialogue. They're not encumbered by some of the governance and political processes that others are, and that's a natural consequence of life. So they cast the net out pretty far. They put some challenging recommendations out there to stimulate a dialogue, and it's part of a process to get us to a different place. Elements of the first and second regional plan got incorporated into the infrastructure here. I can tell you a number of times, Brian, that I thanked people who preceded me by decades about the decisions they made to put elements of infrastructure in place at New York City Transit or the MTA to deliver better service. And I was thankful for what they did. The RPA is part of that process.
Tom Prendergast, former chairman and CEO of the MTA, now executive vice president and chief strategy officer of STV, Inc., a transportation engineering firm, and he wrote the transit section of the new Regional Plan Association report on various big things looking forward for decades in our region. We will have the head of the RPA in a future segment to talk about some of the other sections. For now, Tom Prendergast, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.